One of the markets that we follow saw sellers absolutely go on strike today. And it's a market that we've been waiting to engage in the rally and in the battle for 2021 acres. Yeah, you got it. It's cotton. Cotton had an explosive session today. Corn and bean futures leaked some volatility with livestock prices generally higher.
Live from weather-related temporary confinement via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, big move in cotton today. And I was sending around some messages, trying to figure out exactly what was going on in there. And, of course, I included Brian Grady at Pro Farmer on that list of people that I was, hey, what happened in cotton? And he said, we talked about it on Tuesday.
Brian Stein knows all. Yep.
Chip. I was like, oh, my gosh. And it's the fund positions. The fund longs had gotten small enough that there just wasn't much selling left in this market to happen. So that triggered the buying interest from the funds again. And when the funds started buying in the cotton market today, the sellers just left the pit. Packed it up and walked away.
I probably could have researched this myself, but is there not a trading limit in cotton?
Yeah. Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Wow. And still didn't hit it today?
I'm not exactly sure what it is. Maybe somebody can help me out and tweet that at me, what the daily trading limit in cotton is. But it was a big move. It was a big move, no doubt about it. No doubt. And, you know, I kind of like the way that corn and soybeans traded. It's not like we marched these markets higher and had some impressive strong day or anything like that. It just felt comfortable, consistent, felt organized the way the market traded today. So, yeah, I'm encouraged.
I'm glad to hear that.
And some awesome export sales. Let's get to some of those details there.
Well, Chip, March soft red winter wheat futures once again tried to push through resistance at 650 and failed. The inability to build on overnight upside momentum triggered another sell-off, sending front month futures to double-digit losses. Russia now plans a permanent formula-driven tariff on wheat exports. That plan could be a wet blanket on global wheat prices in the future. Export sales of wheat in the weekend of January 28 totaled nearly 737,000 metric tons, with 643,000 sold for old crop and more than 93,000 metric tons sold for new crop delivery. China topped the list of old crop wheat buyers. July HRW wheat was 5.5 cents lower, 623.5. July soft red slipped a nickel, 628. September spring wheat down 3.25, 621.75. Yeah. Chip.
Okay, so the world's biggest wheat exporter is planning a permanent formula-driven tariff. That tariff is going to be calculated by how far the actual market is trading above $200 per metric ton. Well, I'm telling you, if they do it that way, it's going to trade awfully close to $200 per metric ton. And that's cheap wheat. That's cheap wheat. But it's not the way to do it. Let the market handle it.
Well, Chip, it was widely expected, but it's still an eye-popping number when corn export sales top 7.5 million metric tons, you think, in USDA's weekly export sales report. But because it was expected and was built into prices last week, the report failed to provide price support. China's purchase of 5.86 million metric tons of corn was confirmed in the report. Japan was also a noted buyer with just over 500,000 tons, with Mexico in for more than 400,000 tons. Corn futures opened steady, pushed to a new contract high in the overnight, and then slipped back for a low-range close. March corn futures were 2 cents lower, 550. May corn slipped a penny and a half to 547.5. December corn closed at 451.75. That's up 0.75 cents. March corn locked in at 550. That feels
sure
psychological,
is.
Chip. Huh?
Yep. We still had an 11-cent range from 558 down to 547 today, settled right at 550. So an 11-cent range isn't terrible for that corn market, but it's starting to, like I said, volatility is starting to leak out of that market a little bit.
Soybean export sales totaled just over 1.457 million metric tons, with old crop sales of 824,000 metric tons and new crop sales of more than 633,000. The old crop sales topped trade expectations, with China at the top of the list with nearly 600,000 metric tons of bean buys. The range in March beans narrowed to just 17 cents with the nearly steady close near the midpoint of the range. March bean futures 1 1/4 higher, 1372.5. May beans up 1 3/4 cents, 1369.25. November bean futures closed at 1160 1/4, up 4 cents on the day.
Yeah, a 17-cent range doesn't look very wide when we're coming off of days where there was 40, 50, 60-cent ranges, and the last two were at 30 cents. So, again, volatility leaking out.
Old crop cotton sales of nearly 287,000 running bales were impressive, but chart-based buying gets most of the credit for today's runaway rally. The rally accelerated on the move through the February 1 high of 81.60, and the nitro kicked in on the move above 83 cents. March cotton, 329 points higher, 84.28, and December cotton jumped 216 to close at 81.07. Chip, you said once we cross 80, we're going to hit 90.
Yeah, it took another big step at it, no question. Yep. Brian Grady says, as I mentioned Tuesday, funds trimmed their net long position into the mid-20% of open interest, which has been the point where they have started buying again during much of the rally. He said it's been working like gold, so I don't think it's priced him too much. We'll get to the livestock after we talk to Oliver. Oliver Sloan,
Roger that.
Blue Line Futures. How you doing, Oliver?
I'm doing well. I tell you what, though. I've forgotten what day it is this year more than any year already. And we're month in? My gosh, things are just flying around.
No doubt. You do remember that there's a big game come this weekend, right?
Oh yeah. And I'm still scratching my head. I can't believe they get given the GOAT some points. It seems like a no brainer to take the money line on that one. Although I will say I'm not, anti Chiefs. I like them both. Yeah. I grew up in Nebraska, so we used to make the short trip down there to games all the time. But usually there's a superhero and a villain. These guys are both superheroes, so I think it's a win-win.
Wow. Well, I think it's going to be a fantastic game to watch. I think it's going to be high scoring. I think it's going to be there's going to be some standout plays that everybody is going to remember. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. What do you like in the markets?
Well, in markets, obviously a lot going on. As you had mentioned, the volatility is starting to leak out, and you can certainly see that in a lot of the options markets, specifically in the soybeans, as we're starting to consolidate. And as you had mentioned, in these ranges, it looks tight on the chart, but we're still pretty wide ranges typically than what we see. I think, once we get through the report and maybe a little bit past that, we'll see the ranges expand a little bit and potentially give that next big directional move. But a lot of that's just hinging on what we're going to see next week. Now, one of the things that we've been watching very closely here over the last week or so is that U.S. dollar, a bit of an inverse head and shoulders, firming up a little bit. And it correlates to a little bit of a head and shoulders pattern in the wheat. So if the dollar continues to strengthen, I think there's more potential for pressure on the wheat market here in the near term.
Gotcha. Okay. Watch that inverse between the dollar and the wheat trade. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
You bet. That's Oliver Sloan, Blue Line Futures. Okay. When we come back, we're going to get you ready for some of those reports or the report that is coming out next week. We've got Bill Biederman from agmarket.net up next. Hey, everybody. Chip Flora here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us, and we're going to have a conversation here real quick with Bill Biederman from agmarket.net. But Davis, first, if you would, step us through those export sales numbers on beef and pork.
You bet. Well, beef export sales, 29,800 metric tons. Outstanding. Helped live cattle futures push higher today. February live cattle, 97.5 cents higher at 116.45. April cattle up $1.30 to close at 123.75. March feeders up 97.5 cents to close at 139.50. And pork export sales of 46,300 metric tons were supported by strong sales to China and Mexico. But the cash market held back front month futures, with February lean hogs down $1.35 to 71.02.5, and April hogs firmed a dime to 79.30. I would say the cash market did a little more than hold back front month futures. Feb hogs down $1.35, Chip.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It was a little hard to take, no question. You said that China and Mexico were on the list of buyers of pork there. Almost 18,000 tons went to China, just over 10,000 tons to Mexico. So China was doing a whole lot more than corn last week. And don't forget, the Pro Farmer reported earlier this week that China's been buying up barley from the exporters.
That's right. Yep.
So I don't, man, if it just feels like something big is happening on this Chinese buying. Let's bring in Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net. Have a conversation about that. Bill, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. I'm glad you're here. Glad you're here. This Chinese demand, and it, like I just said, it's not just pork. It's not just beans. It's not just corn. It's barley. It's sorghum. It's cotton. Everywhere you look, they're showing up, Bill.
Well, I don't think they're done yet, Chip. I mean, I think they could be getting close on corn as far as their purchases, but I mean, just the shipping schedule that it's going to take to get this out is going to be amazing.
Yeah. Can we do that? I think one of the reasons, you know, we look at the shipments, actual shipments, the inspections of soybeans right now, and they're very good. But corn shipments, everybody's getting a little concerned that we may not be able to get all the work done in the time that we've got left in the marketing year. And the marketing year doesn't end until the end of August.
Yeah, so right now on shipments, you know, we're running around 110 million bushels with corn and beans, and you know, most of that soybeans. We're going to switch that. We're going to invert that to corn probably in the next 4 to 6 weeks. We're already seeing huge lines for trying to get corn down to the river and get moved. But we're going to have to ship about 70 million bushels per week of corn. So, I mean, basically, whether it's the Gulf or the PNW or whatever, we're going to be at capacity. So, Chip, as I'm going through these numbers and I'm looking at these exports and what we're doing, if we don't curtail sales quickly, we'll have to import, right? We won't, but we don't have any capacity to import if we're shipping out that kind of number. So, you know, something's going to have to resolve. And the other issue is, when I look at these demand numbers and I compare them to what USDA has in the supply and demand tables, I'll just give you a quick example. Mm-hmm. In the last U.S. supply demand table, they had Chinese imports total from the world, 17.5. Well, we believe they've already bought 27 million tons, 21 from the United States when you include the unknown, 6 from Ukraine, that's 27 million tons already bought. So, I mean, USDA is, I hate to say it, but their numbers just are so far off. The only explanation is it's USDA math.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a new chief economist at USDA, Seth Meyer, and Seth has been on the show a few times, and I think he's going to be more likely to use analysis and build the analysis. In other words, here's what's happening. If it continues to, this is where we should end up. I think they're going to put some, they're going to bring some predictions back into the tables. I think they will. What we've been dealing with, Bill, and I know you know this, but just for everybody, what they've been doing is waiting for an event to happen and then put it into the chart, into the table.
Well, Chip, the event happened. It's already happened. Okay, so I mean, they've been waiting for shipments to prove them wrong. But I mean, you're not going to sell 27 million tons and only ship 17. So they're way behind. But I do agree with you. Seth is a really sharp guy, and he's new there, and he's already indicated that they're reviewing every person and what they do and how they do their job. So I suspect there's going to be some positive changes there. I really do. Another thing, I had a conversation with Seth not too long ago, and he said, look, he says, our WASD reports are trying to predict what will be at the end of the year. And I'm an economist, right? So I look at it and I go, well, I agree with you. At the end of the year, we probably will be somewhere close to that.
Right.
But at the rate we're going right now, we're going to have deficit soybean situation, and we're going to have a billion bushel in corn. So we're not where you're telling us it's going to be. We have to see something happen in order for that to get there. And the question is, well, what has to happen?
Right.
And how will it happen?
It's almost like the S&D tables have to reflect a what-if scenario at some point to get us to what is being projected right now. So in other words, if prices don't rally, export demand is going to go to here, domestic demand is going to go to here, and we're going to have less than 100 million bushels of soybeans left over at the end of the year. Now, fix it. Don't let that happen, market. But it's almost like the table has to show it first before we see the market action to get us to what's projected.
You know, it used to be when you and I were in the industry was the one that figured out where the equilibrium was, right?
Yep.
But now it's these people who have no clue what they're trading. They trade a computer. And the computer only looks at the USDA report and doesn't say, well, based on today's numbers, we're really here, so prices have got to go there in order to get where USDA is saying. The computer doesn't understand that. We in the industry, we're going, oh, my God, how are we going to fill the needs in August, July? How are we going to get enough to keep the plant open when we're doing what we're doing right now? And that's it's a serious issue and question being talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's getting a lot of chatter out there right now. There is no question about it.
I heard a guy today, Chip, in an ethanol plant in Indiana said we'll probably be trading corn at 50 over the board.
This summer?
Yeah.
Jeez. Those end users just don't have their coverage in place. Not even yet.
No, they don't.
Man.
And it's the same with the food processors. Food processors are, I just can't believe the industry is as vulnerable as it is right now. So food prices will have to go higher to compensate.
So if basis is 50 over, I mean, I'm guessing he's not anticipating a big break in the flat price either.
No, not until we get the black swan, which is the black swan that I see coming, Chip, could be the February Outlook Conference where they say we're going to have, you know, 10 million more acres. You know, some of it goes to wheat, some goes to cotton and different things. But most, you know, six of it will probably go to corn and beans. If they come out with that kind of an outlook, which won't get confirmed until May, you could put a black cloud over the top of this market.
Yeah. Well, if all they do is allocate 6 million acres to corn and soybeans, 6 million isn't enough acres for beans alone.
Well, right. But you're also going to be pulling in a lot of, you know, you got the PP acres and you've got a dribble, I guess, a CRP. I haven't really looked at those too much. And then you got acreage shifts. So, you know, we're guessing somewhere around 92 on corn and 91 on beans is the current number we're using. But I could really see it hit 94, to be honest with you. But, you know, this is the dilemma that we're talking about here. If they come out with a big acreage number and put a ceiling on where prices will go, because the price won't respond then until there's a weather problem, you still got this problem if you keep prices low that we're going to run out. And there's no way we'll be able to import 80 million bushels of beans. We just don't have the capacity.
Right, right. Yeah, that the port down at Wilmington will be open for business. I'm convinced of that. I just don't know how much we can actually bring in through there and get into the poultry and hog sectors down there. Okay, we're talking with Bill Biederman from agmarket.net. When we come back, why didn't corn, you know, is it just a simple fact that we anticipated all these sales that were in today's report that stopped it from going up? We'll find out. Hey, everybody, Chip Flory here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. Average monthly food price inflation at the highest level since July of 2014. That's a big headline right there that a lot of countries are paying very close attention to. Attaché's corn production and export forecast for Brazil fall short of USDA's current estimates. Ukraine's wheat exports to date continue to signal its export cap will not be tested. India steps up to the rice export market. Amazing. Biden open to more targeted stimulus checks and other compromises. Michael Reagan enjoyed bipartisan support at his confirmation hearing for EPA administrator. And there's some light cash cattle action at slightly higher prices. But boy, I'd sure like to see them lift the anchor on that cash cattle market. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us, and we are having a conversation with Bill Biederman from agmarket.net. Before we get back to Bill, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat, 5.5 cents lower, 6.23.5 today. July soft red slipped a nickel, 5.28. March corn futures were 2 cents lower, 5.50. May corn slipped a penny and a half to 5.47.5. March bean futures 1.25 cents higher, 13.72.5. May beans firmed 1.75 cents to 13.69.25. March cotton, look out, 329 points higher on the day at 84.28. February live cattle, 97.5 cents higher, 116.45. March feeders gained 97.5 cents to close at 139.50. April hogs firmed a dime to 79.30. And Chip, I've scanned Twitter just very quickly, and I still don't see an answer to our question. Anybody know what limit is in cotton? Anybody know?
Maybe Bill AgriTalk. Knows. Bill, do you know what the limit is in cotton?
No, I don't. All I know is that on March 15th, look out, because the funds positions are going to double on everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear you. They won't double. They have the legal right to double their positions from 15,000 corn to 33,000 corn. I don't remember what the number is in beans, but it's big. So, yeah. I mean, you know, so when they have 200,000 long beans, we always go, oh, they're getting pretty close to their limits. It could be 400 after March 15th.
Okay,
I mean,
grief.
Think about that.
That's, you know what? It took me a moment to realize what you were talking about, but yeah, you're exactly right. I'd forgotten about the change in the position limits.
Yeah. So, I mean, can you imagine, guys, if we have a drought this summer?
Oh, well, no.
Prices would reflect something that we don't comprehend because the computer's going to keep buying as long as there's momentum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you get into a situation when there is no incentive to sell, other than to take profits, that's when, like you said, if they can add to a position and with these expanded limits coming, and there's no incentive to sell, good grief.
Our delivery system was switched, as you know, to export locations,
yep.
there's not one exporter or river house that's going to deliver certificates to the exchange. So anybody who's short could be in a squeeze. Like, I'm not saying a game play or GameStop or whatever it's called squeeze, but, you know, we both have been around squeezes before, and they can get exciting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Watch the Ferruzzi thing happening right before our eyes back in the, what was it, 90? Something like that, 89 or 90? That whole thing was pretty exciting to watch, no question. This came in from Steve on email during the break. It says, first off, enjoying the show today. Is it possible to sell more than what you can deliver to China? And if so, what happens then?
Well, that's a great question. So another way to say that, well, to answer that question is you'd have to buy yourself out of a contract. China cancels contracts all the time, so we would have to pay the piper and get out. That's the only way to do it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say there may be some rolling forward, but there's still going to be a penalty to pay on that.
Well, plus what he's talking about is the buyer would have to roll it, right?
Right.
So, I mean, usually it's the seller that rolls, right? So it would be very unusual. It would be unique. What I'm afraid of is in the bean situation is, let's just say we had to import, because right now we're running at about an 80 million bushel deficit for pipeline. Who would we import from? Is it Brazil? I mean, that's going to take, right now, we checked it Friday, it was $2 to get it shipped up to us, so it's $2 over. And then you got to interior it, so who's going to pay that? Now, versus who else has stocks?
Yeah.
China. Maybe we buy it back from China.
Right.
I mean, you look at the world supply-demand table, there's not a lot of places.
Right. Yeah.
Brazil's carryover is 20 million tons.
Mm-hmm. Which is next to nothing. Next to nothing.
China's is 28.
Okay, so the other question that I was getting today throughout the day is, how can we get 7.5 million metric tons of corn export sales announced today and the market not go up? How does that happen?
Okay, easy answer. We're the buyer, right? So we're hedgers, so we buy the board first. We bought the board, who knows, maybe a year ago because we knew all this was going to happen, right? And we probably got our cousins and uncles to buy too. All right, so we're long hedged. Now we go to somebody in Geneva who can source us some corn out of the U.S., but they're not going to show it U.S. They're going to show it on their Geneva books. So let's just say I bought that cash corn 2 weeks ago, and I didn't get out of my hedge because I'm a good trader and I'm shrewd. I'm not going to get out of that hedge until we switch that Geneva sale over to the U.S. books and show it under export sales. And the day of that announcement, I'm going to sell out of my long hedge. That selling just caps the market. I mean, they just go right into it. So they're making really good money on their hedges, plus that lag between when they bought the cash and when they sell. But that's why.
Yep. And it's all within the rules. It's all legal the way that they're doing this.
Yeah.
But it feels like a loophole that takes some of the oomph out of the export sales. And it's the timing of it all, Bill, I think is what's got some people upset over this is, they were buying when the price was down and it took a couple of days before people started saying, wait a second, what is going on out there? We get the big move to the upside and then we start to get the conversation about the export sales. I think there's going to be an effort to look at the rules on the reporting of these sales to get the actual announcements lined up to when they actually happen.
But see, if they're booking it through a Geneva division of a company, they don't have to show it on the U.S. books until they decide to switch it. So it would be hard to crack that nut.
It sure would be. Okay, so what are you thinking then for these carryover numbers on old crop in the February 9 supply and demand reports, corn and soybeans?
Corn is 1352, down from 1552, so about a 200 million bushel drop. That brings your carryover stocks to use down to 9%, so now you're down to only looking at three other years in history that compare. In soybeans, we're down to 114 million carryover versus 140 USDA. Drops your stocks to use ratio, 2.5%.
Yeah, I was going to say 2.5%.
It's you know, there's two other years we were down to 4.5%. So we're in a pretty unique environment.
Yeah. When you've got those kinds of projections out there, and then you've already gave us your acreage numbers that you're working with for 2021, 92 million on corn, 91 million on soybeans. So, I mean, those, in my mind, those are not negative acreage estimates.
Right. I mean, even with a huge yield of 182, your carryover is still at 1.7.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a struggle because we're starting out with you know, lower exports than where we think we're going to be. Like, we think this year's exports are on track to push right into the 3 billion mark, and we're using 2.8 for next year. And if I adjust my old crop up to 2.9 or 3 billion bushel, we're down to a billion bushel carryover. So everything changes. Let me just quick change this one number to 2950 for old crop ending stocks. That takes us down to 1100, and it keeps carryover down to 1500 with a 182 yield. If I change that to 178, which we both know is still a good yield,
sure,
get back down to a 1.1.
Yeah.
And if you have a 167 yield like we had 2 years ago, mm-hmm, I think you're going to have to keep everything in the bin and at the end of the year retire.
Yep. Yep, I love it.
Prices would go through the roof. You'd only have 200 carryover.
So here, you know, a lot of times when I ask a question, I think I might know the answer to it before I ask it. And in this one, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this. Bill, are you feeling any urgency to get some new crop sales on the books?
You know, Chip, it's funny that you asked that. Okay, so I'm an economist by training, which... Yeah. So I really get into what we just talked about. What does that mean in price? But I grew up on a farm. I still do have some farm. And I'm looking at the economics of the farm, and I'm going, I've got orders in right now at 570 on old crop, which is another 20 cents higher. That puts me at 475 on new crop. I think a guy needs to just get a floor under everything in case there's a black swan. I mean, because of the profits. It's the economics of the farm. The profits are so good. I bought some puts the other day to lock in some old crop stuff. I bought May short-dated 430 puts for like 12 cents. You know what? I can sleep. I don't care. I don't care if I lose 12 cents. Because, I mean, I think we could go to 6. But I will tell you this. If we get up to that 475 level on the new crop, I'm going to do it again. I'll keep spending 12 cents every day to gain 50.
Gotcha.
And sleep at night. That's the big thing. I mean, I'd hate to walk into it at the dinner table and be looking at my wife, and she's chatting away. I don't hear a word she's saying because I'm so stressed because the market's going down, right? I don't want to be in that situation.
Gotcha. Great counsel. Really good stuff, Bill. Thanks, man. I'm so glad you had time for us to get on here today.
You bet. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Bill Biederman, agmarket.net. Davis and I will be right back. Wrap things up on today's second hour of AgriTalk.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
I might need a little bit of this to get me into the end of the day.
All right.
Yeah. You know I love my job, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Hello?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, it's your favorite job so far.
Right. But, I mean, I'm not that guy either. I do look forward to the end of the working day. But today, I just wish it would go on and on and on.
Oh.
I do.
You want to expound on that?
Well, it might have something to do with the fact that it's about 15 degrees out, the wind's blowing hard, and I don't have my heat hauser on my Ranger.
Ooh.
To go push snow. It's going to be chilly out there.
It's not going to get any warmer. If that helps in your decision-making process, you know.
Right. It makes me want to get out there and get it done as quickly as we can, because you're right.
Look at it as getting a little downside protection on the weather. By the way, can I just say how much I love where Bill Biederman ended up?
Okay.
Because we talk about all kinds of stuff. The market's going to do this. Well, China is that, and supplies and ending stocks and yada, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the great benefits of honing in on this stuff is that you can sleep at night. You can pay attention when your wife is talking to you, because you're not preoccupied with, oh my gosh, I'm losing so much money every day, every day.
Yep.
Now, you manage your risk, baby, and he just put on a clinic in the last 30 seconds of why that's important. I love that.
I'm willing to spend 12 cents to make 50 cents every day.
And I can sleep at night.
And I can sleep at night, and I can pay attention at the dinner table.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 It really good. Just solid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons that Bill's been around as long as we've been around.
Right.
He understands that, and it's that risk management component. He's not afraid. Well, not afraid. You know, there's two kinds of fear in a market like we're in right now, because of all the fundamentals, because of all the funds that the funds are doing and the expanded limits that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
The two kinds of risk are the black swan happens and we take, you know, limit down, limit down, limit down, limit down. The other fear is that you decide, you know what, doggone it, that price is just good enough for me. So you take it, you make the cash sales, and a buck later you're looking back saying, why did I do that? Why did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
By maintaining some flexibility in your marketing, whether it be with a cash sale and a call option or a put option, in this type of an environment just makes all the sense in the world to me.
Sense. And you know what, which is scarier? You're driving down the road without your hands on the wheel, or you're driving down the road with your hands on the wheel.
Yeah,
think of it that way.
Good. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's right. That's right. Okay. I knew when we started talking about the reporting process on the export sales to China in particular.
Yeah.
When we started talking about that, I was thinking to myself, wait a second, I read something about this just, you know, when? When did I
Seems
read about
familiar.
It?
Hmm.
It sounds really familiar to me, yeah. And it was this morning in Wiesmeyer's update.
Yes.
And it may have been in Pro Farmer's first thing today. And I usually it was first thing today?
Yep.
Okay. So here it is. How USDA reports corn sales to China under industry discussion and chatter. When it's a really, really, really good item, I copy and I paste it into a special file so that it's always there when I need it. And this one got copy and pasted. U.S. exporters in the recent past have covered corn needs well ahead of the time corn sales to China are being reported via USDA's daily export sales reporting system. For example, COFCO has been a hefty buyer of U.S. cash corn in the U.S. domestic market for months, but they are viewed as a U.S. domestic operator, so their sales do not have to be announced via USDA's daily export sales reporting system until boats are loaded and the corn ownership is shifted to China. Others note the corn is getting bought upriver. SIF basis values are the first clue, one analyst told Wiesmeyer. Whatever COFCO China is doing is within the rules. I just don't know all of the rules. There are loopholes, and they found them, and they are using the loopholes in their advantage. The delay in reporting could be that the paperwork isn't officially signed, even though the corn has been purchased. Good faith deals are easy when exporters know China needs the corn. Bottom line here, U.S. corn is being purchased well before firms actually sell it overseas.
Wow.
Which is when they have to report it to USDA. Mm-hmm. So when I read this, a couple of things hit me. Well, doggone it. I'd sure like to know when these transactions are actually happening. That's the first thing that I thought. The other thing that I thought was, once it's announced, once the corn sale is announced, it's not coming home. It's not getting canceled. Mm-hmm. Because the transaction has been completed by the time it's announced.
Right.
So to everybody
X
out
amount
there,
of months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So to everybody out there that is thinking, well, we're putting all these sales on the books, but they're not going to happen. You know, they're going to get canceled. That's what China does.
Right.
On the beans, they play some of those games because they've got a second market, a second origin source of those soybeans that they can go to at a different time of the year. So they'll play those games. This corn feels different. And reading this, they don't, they're not announced until ownership is transferred.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once the ownership is transferred, you're not going to cancel. You're not going to cancel those purchases. I thought it was fascinating. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow morning.
That's a good
point. I think
that's really good.
Yeah, I think we'll talk more about it tomorrow morning in the free for all when we've got Wiesmeyer Haney and Mark Reckers coming back. And tomorrow afternoon, Darren Fry, Water Street Advisory, is going to be our guest. So I'm really looking forward to that. Big thanks to Bill Biederman for coming back on the show today. For Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Come back tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock.